This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge Aotearoa and Kay Leather. Hello
everybody.
and of course we're looking at the wonders of the night sky, which have been important to our ancestors from the beginning of, or even before civilization. I've got also Anne Keith Austin here, but I haven't seen Keith yet, so something may have happened there, okay? We'll catch up with Keith a little bit later. Also, I always like to thank Dan Broughton of Wairapa Web Design, who sponsors this program. And I guess the thing what I love about the night sky is, as I mentioned earlier, our ancestors have been using the night sky long before the dawn of history to understand the cycle of the seasons and all sorts of things like that. And that's what we're going to be having a look at a little bit tonight, okay? But first of all, to mention about Stonehenge Aotearoa, at the moment we're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can just come out and do a trek on that, can't you?
Yeah, you can do a self-guided tour on those in those times. If you want a guided tour, that's a 90-minute session with Richard, either during the day, ending at sunset, or in the evening, the Star Trek laser tour where you're learning about the sky, then you do have to book in.
Okay, so that's at the moment. So just give Clay a call if you want to any more information about those special programs that we put on. Okay, well, as soon as it gets dark tonight, and of course at the moment we've got a beautiful sky, you'll see a really bright star out in the western evening sky. Well, it's no star at all. That brilliant star that you can see is, in fact, the planet Venus. All right? And it's in front. If Venus will set fairly quickly, because you'll see it when it's actually quite close to the horizon. One of the reasons for that is that Venus is closer to the sun than the Earth. All right? So we only ever see it very low in the morning sky or evening sky. But following behind Venus, a little bit higher up, is another big brilliant star, which again is no star at all. It's in fact the planet Jupiter. So we've got these two big planets in the sky at the moment. And even with a pair of binoculars, you'll be able to see that Jupiter's got moons orbiting around it. Anyway, folks, once it gets really dark, look into the north. This is the panorama of stars that we can see at the moment. And I guess almost due north is a familiar group of stars, and that is the Sickle. Can you see the Sickle there, those of you watching that on TV? There it is there. That's the Sickle. You've got to always bear in mind, everything we're looking at, all these things were named in the northern hemisphere. So we see everything upside down to what you would be looking at if you saw it in the northern hemisphere. The Sickle was all important because the rising of the stars of the Sickle told the people it was time to bring in the harvest, because the Sickle would always rise up in, going back to the northern hemisphere, 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. It marked the time of the autumn equinox, time to bring in the harvest. Right, so that was the signal people had that was about to occur. Also, you may have heard the term the harvest moon. Right? When the first full moon following that, right, is the harvest moon. And the reason why it's called the harvest moon is the full moon gave people the light to work right the way through the dark, hours of darkness, to bring in the valuable harvest.
It's about 22%, isn't it, that you get sunlight reflected off the moon?
It's something like that, but it's certainly enough to work.
If you consider that, it's about a fifth. It's not bad. Yeah.
Well, we had a full moon the other night, and I was wandering around outside having a look. And
you get very clear shadows from the obelisk at Stonehenge.
Yeah, that's right. So that's what that was all about. You've got to remember, this is not just convenience. Once upon a time, there was no such things as calendars and so on. So people were watching the stars. So when the Sickle rose up, time to bring in the harvest, all right, and the harvest moon. And our harvest moon actually occurred on Thursday, April the 2nd. That's when it occurred this year. Okay, well, now the brightest star in the Sickle is Regulus, right? And Regulus is the heart of the lion. And so this is the constellation of Leo the lion. And as it mentions there, it was formalized or put together 6,000 years ago. and it is actually one of the most ancient constellations in the zodiac. You see, first of all, people would have used particularly groups of stars because they were vital to some sort of seasonal event. And then these occurred at certain times of the year, and then they, where there's a gap, they added in other constellations and so on. So this is Leo the lion up there, all right? Now, going back, the Egyptians believed that the sun was born in Leo, right? And these are the beliefs that, we say the beliefs, it's the stories that people put together to understand the...
Well, what they're really saying is our civilization.
That's right, yeah.
So you have to have a look and see why was Leo so important. And, of course, you find the Sphinx, don't you? So
that's right, yes.
Yeah, you start seeing why they were saying that.
Half man or half woman.
Came to be, I suppose.
So the sun was born in Leo, okay, and it was the symbol of Sekhmet, right? And this is a lion-headed goddess who carried a fire-spitting cobra, right? So this is Sekhmet. She was the symbol of the Leo, right?
You've got the cobra on the pharaoh's crown as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
So you start finding that you're getting these images in different places.
Yeah. And of course, these things are all important. And the image you can see on the left-hand side there is that actually going back almost 6,000 years in time in the ancient temple and so on. Well, there she is there. The seasonal climate was believed to be a reflection of Sekhmet's mood, right? So it's this goddess who had a lion's head, and depending on how happy she was, that's what affected the climate, all right? So when she was at rest and she was happy, she was the figure of calm and royal dignity, right? And she looked after everyone. But when she was angry, she transformed herself into the Eye of Ra, which is the sun, and became a fierce war goddess. So didn't want to worry about it because she was pretty bad, okay? At this time, she breathed flames and searing heat. The parched winds of the desert radiated from her body, and she charred her enemies' bodies and gulped their blood, right? So as I said earlier, you don't need to upset this goddess, but of course each year, sometimes she would bring in those harsh, boiling hot winds. Well, not boiling hot, were they? Because there was no water.
Searing hot.
Searing hot winds and so on. Right. So this is really, when you look at the ancient religions, particularly in gods and goddesses, what they were doing was often symbolising the climate and climate changes of the people and so on.
Yeah, the gods are the world around them, literally. People think of them thinking of the gods as real things, but what they were really doing is talking about the characteristics.
That's right, yeah. So that was Sekhmet, okay? Now, in Greek mythology, however, because you find a lion, we go from one culture to another, and they're all identifying this as a lion. And in Greek mythology, Leo is the Nemean lion, and he was a monstrous beast which came from the moon. So if you want to know where lions come from, just look out at that big bright moon up there at the moment. Right? His claws were razors, and his hide was so tough that no weapon could pierce it. Right? So this is the great Nemean lion. Now, the first labour, remember Hercules had these labours.
12 labours.
12 labours, right? And why do you have to do the labours, Kay?
He had a problem. He killed his children, hadn't he, or something like that. I don't know.
I can't remember the story completely, yeah. Anyway,
he was ordered to do it anyway.
Yeah. The first labour of Hercules was to kill the lion, this lion, which was terrorising the people. And as I just mentioned there, its hide was so tough that no weapon could pierce it, all right?
I think there was a ruler or something who thought it was totally impossible to complete the labours, so therefore he'd be rid of them, you see.
Yeah.
Only he did complete them, didn't
he? That's right, because actually he soon began to realise that he couldn't use swords in that. So what he did, after battling the lion for not less than a month, from one moon to the other, Hercules seized the lion and strangled it to death. Right, so he couldn't pierce its skin, but he could strangle it. Now, that's what happened there. And now, unfortunately, this upset the queen of the gods, who's Hera, right? And she didn't put up with people being naughty, did they, Shikhe?
No, no. Well, she had a good reason. Her husband was quite wayward.
Anyway, so this angered Hera. And so what she did was raised the soul of the lion and placed it into the sky. And this became the stars of Leo, right? So that's where it's, the Egyptians say that the Greeks say that the stars of Leo actually came from, right? Okay, so looking at it, now let's look at some of the fantasies and so on around Leo and so on. But let's actually look at the star itself, Regulus. Its distance we now know is 79 light years. So we see it as it was 79 years ago. And this is something you've always got to remember when we're looking into space. Things are so far away, we're actually looking backwards in time. Mm.
Right? So anybody looking at us sees us as we were 79 years ago. I wasn't born.
Well, I was just born.
Just.
I say.
You're a little wee bub.
So somebody on a planet outbound Regulus, looking back, they wouldn't see you, right?
No. They'd really miss out.
And neither World War One or World War Two hadn't occurred at that stage. Yeah, that's right. So it's something always to bear in mind is that when we look out at the universe, we don't see it as it is, we see it as it was. Mm. And the further we look into space, the further backwards in time we look. Anyway, Regulus, because once we can measure the distance of these stars, and initially something like Regulus would have been done by triangulation. So as the Earth goes around the Moon, around the Sun, we'd measure its precise position relative to other stars, and then 6 months later measure that again. And invariably, if it's fairly close, within a couple of hundred light years, you actually see a slight change in its position.
That's what Cook was doing, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah. And so you can therefore use that to work out its distance, which is 79 light years, right? Now, once we know that, we can learn to a few other things about it. First of all, I've got a picture come up now of Regulus and the Sun to scale, if you can see them to scale in size. And also temperature. Most of the peak of radiation of our Sun is in the yellow wave band, okay? While Regulus is in the blue wave band because it's a lot hotter. Its surface is a lot hotter.
Right? So it's blue hot.
Blue hot.
Not white hot. It's got even more hot.
And it's 140 times brighter than the Sun. So essentially, if we had Regulus as our Sun, the Earth would vaporise from that particular pot. Okay? And you can also see Jupiter, the largest planet, there as well. However, Regulus wouldn't look like that. Okay? First of all, what we know is it's tremendously hot. So while its maximum radiation is in the blue wave band, we would see it as an absolutely brilliant white star with, yes, a blue sheen to it as well. But also, it is rotating so fast on its axis that instead of being nice and spherical, it's actually elliptical in size, in shape. Right? So that's the image that I've just brought out is what we think Regulus would look like if you could see it from a distant planet. Would be something like in the orbit of orbiting around Jupiter or something like that, that far away. All right. So that's what Regulus would really look like. And you see, this is the importance of what we measure distances and we measure temperatures. We can move away from a thing just being a dot of light in the sky to being something extraordinary.
Understanding its ecosystem, really, because its planets are its ecosystem, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. Mm. Now, however, a Regulus, where our Sun is a single star, Regulus is not. It has two other stars which are orbiting around it. And both of them are actually fainter than our Sun. One is a sort of yellowy-orange star, a little bit cooler, probably got about 70% the mass of the Sun. And the other one is a red dwarf. Now, the red dwarf, you can see it there for who's watching it, the red dwarfs are, in fact, the most common star in the universe. Right. The vast majority of stars in our galaxy are red dwarfs, but they are so faint that we can't see them without a telescope. In fact, the nearest star to the
Proxima
Centauri is a red dwarf. So what we've got is this yellow dwarf and red dwarf, which are orbiting around each other, right? And in turn, that pair is orbiting around a Regulus.
They will actually outlast Regulus, won't they?
Oh, yes, yes.
Even though they're little wee things, you think they're not going to last long, but in actual fact, they do.
This is it. The amount of energy that's radiated from a star is related to its mass. So it's greater its mass, the more energy. But it's not just a double light. If we doubled the mass of the sun, it wouldn't be just twice as bright, right? It would be 16 times brighter.
But it's chewing up its substance
two times
faster.
Two times two, so on. Yeah, that's right. And of course, it's using up its valuable energy, as Kay said, at a much more rapid rate. So the bigger a star, the brighter it is, but the shorter it lives. And the most brilliant stars in the universe, they only last for a few million years. Yeah.
And the red dwarfs will still be there when everything else is gone.
Gone, yeah, that's right. So if human civilization ever lasts for billions of years, they'd probably end up around a red dwarf, wouldn't they?
Yes, serves them right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, the other, looking out towards Regulus, there are other bright stars in the sky. To the west, we see Sirius, which is the brightest star, and any star in the sky that's brighter than Sirius is no star. As we just pointed out, we've got Venus and Jupiter at the moment.
So to us, it looks like the brightest star. Mm. There are stars which are more powerful.
Yes, yeah. Mm. So we've got Sirius and Procyon. Both of those are relatively close stars. We can look at those in more detail later, but Sirius is about 25 times brighter than the sun or something like that. It's a white-hot star. And it too is a binary star with two stars orbiting around each other, and one of them is a white dwarf, right, a dead star. So once upon a time, there was a much bigger and brighter star where Sirius is, and it's, as we just mentioned earlier, this star has used up all its energy. It's just a white dwarf, a core.
What's left?
Yeah, it's just a core which is slowly cooling, right? It's used up all its nuclear energy. And then the other one we've got is Procyon, okay, which has also got a white dwarf. So how about that? So both of these stars would have been very different.
Well, double stars are actually quite common, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Okay, so those are two bright stars we can see in the west. And to the east, we can see another star, bright star, and that's Arcturus. And you will notice it, comparing it to Regulus and Procyon, Arcturus has got a yellowy-orange colour. And indeed, this thing is a red giant. So when our sun begins to run out of energy, it would turn into a red giant, much like Arcturus is.
Mm.
And that's how the final stages of a life of an ordinary star is. So that's the giant star up in the sky at the moment. Okay, folks, so that's some of the things. And what we will do in our next program, we're going to have a look at some of these things in greater detail. But just to mention some of the important things we've got coming up in the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of humanity, we've got the winter solstice coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to always have a special program at the winter solstice. This is called The Tales of the Winter Solstice. And that will start at 4 p.m. on Sunday, June the 21st. All right. But it's absolutely imperative, if you want to go to that, you do need to book it. All right, so you need to phone up and give Kay a call. And here we'll be looking at...
You can book in directly through the booking system.
Yeah. So you can look at all the grand
stories. Some people have.
Yeah. Now, this is the winter solstice down here. If you lived in the northern hemisphere,
it'd be summer.
It was Christmas.
When you look at that picture, you see that the sun appears to be over a stone. Well, that's what's going to happen at the solstice.
And only at the solstice, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you come, solstices, you get a little bit more chance in, say, maybe 2 days, but any equinox, it's a one night only, but you will see the sun set over the Healestone.
Yeah. And finally, one other important one that we got coming up, of course, is Matariki. And we've got the Legends of Matariki, and that's on Friday, July the 10th. At 4:30 p.m. All right, and most people will know Matariki as being very important to Mari, marking the beginning of the year. What most people don't realise is these stars actually mark the beginning of year for all the peoples of Europe and Asia thousands of years ago.
But the one thing that's different is the time of the year that they appear to rise.
Yeah,
because our moon has caused our Earth to have a wobble, and it's a very slow wobble, takes nearly 26,000 years, but it does move the stars and the seasons through the calendar around about 1 day every 71 years. And it's been a long time. It was originally in spring in those days of Greece and that, but now it's gradually moving closer to the winter solstice.
That's right. And this is something you've always got to bear in mind when you're looking at ancient history, is these things change. So if you want to know what our ancestors were looking at 2,000 years ago, what was the Star of Bethlehem? We should do that one day. Right?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to go back and look like and check out what the sky was that they were looking at 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, it often, the stories, you think the stories are just stories, but they're not. The stories are one way of putting knowledge into a context that you can remember.
That's right, well, because we can all remember a good story. So if you
that's
want
right.
people to remember something, you put it in a story.
They've been eroded by people joining stories together that seem to sound the same. But in actual fact, it's very important to read the original story, because the original story is telling you something very specific.
Very vital.
Even in the Maori stories, I've tried to decode some things, and you start with what appears to be a simple statement and end up with two pages of facts that are being drawn out of that simple statement.
So I always say to people, if I ask a group of people, adults, who knows the story of the three bears, just about everyone will put up their hand.
Not these days, mate. You're getting dated.
Yeah, am I getting dated? Okay. But the point is, stories that you learn even when you were a kid, you remember it to your dying days. So it made it important. If you want people to remember something important, this is dangerous, this is good, you put it in a story.
I mean, if you messed up Maridom, if you messed up some of these important stories, you'd end up in the Umu. Because you were destroying the knowledge, you see. By messing it up, some of the knowledge was being lost.
Yeah.
That's how important it is.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, we're going to have to wind up there, all right? And just remind you that when we're open, Wednesday to Sunday at the moment from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, and very shortly we'll be catching you up again. All right, and I've got something wrong on the board. What was it, Kay?
It will direct through. That website will direct through, but because we now use the New Zealand one, you can drop out the co if you want to. Just stonehenge-aotearoa.nz. But the other one's there. It still exists, and it still redirects, so you won't end up in the ether.
Yeah. Okay. Well, having said that, we'll sign off, or we'll catch up with you in the very near future. Lots of good nights, starry nights.